Apple CEO Tim Cook is defending his company's controversial accounting maneuvers. In an interview broadcast last night on CBS's 60 Minutes, Cook was asked by Charlie Rose about the two-thirds of Apple revenue that avoids U.S. taxes because it's kept overseas. Rose pointed out that some in Congress want Apple to pay taxes on that revenue.
This is a tax code, Charlie, that was made for the industrial age, not the digital age. It's backwards. It's awful for America. It should have been fixed many years ago. It's past time to get it done.
But here's what they concluded. Apple is engaged in a sophisticated scheme to pay little or no corporate taxes on $74 billion in revenues held overseas.
That is total political crap.
Joining us from Silicon Valley to talk about that and some of the big tech stories of 2015 is NPR's Steve Henn. Steve, great to have you.
Oh, great to be here.
And is it total political crap that he says it is?
Well, you know, this is an issue that has been really sensitive at Apple for a long time. I mean, I think Tim Cook is personally offended by the notion that they are dodging taxes in the United States. You know, he pointed out earlier in that interview that Apple pays more tax than any other taxpayer in America. And I think he would actually like the tax code to be changed and has made the case that if it were, the company would be in a position to bring billions of dollars back. I mean, they have over $150 billion held overseas. Were they to bring all of that cash back today, they'd pay close to $60 billion in taxes. You know, it's his position that Apple could better use that money if it were able to keep more of it. It could build newer things, better things, and employ more people both here and abroad.
All right. Well, a conversation that will continue, I am sure. But we want to talk to you about the year in tech as well. A lot has happened this year. What do you think, Steve, was the biggest thing that happened in the industry that you cover in 2015?
Well, you know, I think if you asked me that question in 2025, I'd have a better answer for you. You know, looking back 10 years ago, 2005, Facebook was just a year old. The iPhone hadn't been introduced. Even then, it was probably clear to me and clear to you, I think you were in college and on Facebook, that mobile and social were going to have a huge impact. What's interesting now, 10 years later, is that both of those industries are relatively mature. And I think what we're seeing now is the big players in tech, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Apple, beginning to poke around and try to figure out what's next. And it's not entirely clear. So I think the biggest story in tech is actually no one really knows what the future holds.
But would you say it was a good year for Silicon Valley, for these companies that you're talking about, 2015? Did they do well?
Yes, the biggest companies did well. And I think there were a lot of positive developments in terms of technology. I mean, if you look into the pipeline for innovation, there are really interesting things going on. I mean, the teams designing self-driving cars made a lot of progress. There's real private investment in quantum computing, which is pretty exciting because it would just explode the computing power available to large companies in the world if anyone could get it to work. For Silicon Valley, though, it was a tough year. I mean, the year began with, you know, very prominent venture capitalists picking fights with the press about whether or not we're seeing a technology bubble. I think that's an argument they probably lost and will lose. And there has also been a lot of back and forth in the press and in the public about diversity in technology companies. And it's become increasingly clear this is an enormous problem. I mean, these companies shape so many aspects of our lives, but when you look at who works there and who really has the power, it's been largely a story of men and relatively privileged men running things. And I think there's a lot of pushback against that now.
Okay. Well, one of the biggest stories out of Silicon Valley this last year was the introduction of the Apple Watch. Got a lot of press. Was it worth the hype? And how are wearables at this point, Steve?
Well, you know, I don't think the Apple Watch has generated the kind of excitement that certainly Apple was hoping it would. You know, it's an interesting product. Exactly how people are going to use it and what it would take for that product to take off, it still really isn't clear. And I think it'll take a couple years to figure out if there is enough you can do on a watch to make it worth the price. That said, I think there's a tremendous excitement out here about the potential of wearables. You know, people are experimenting with everything from wearables that collect detailed health information, you know, baby monitors, adjustable noise altering headphones, augmented reality glasses. And, you know, for the hardcore engineers, I mean, I think they're really imagining building an age where all of these devices enhance the human experience in profound ways. I think that's going to take a long time, and there will be a lot of failed experiments before we get there.
This was also a year in which Washington at least tried to stay up to date with technology and the kinds of regulations that are going to be needed as we get into all these new areas with some of the technology coming out of Silicon Valley and elsewhere. And the biggest policy decision probably was the one from the FCC supporting net neutrality. Tell us about that and whether we're seeing any impact of that yet.
Okay, so I first wanted to kind of give a definition of net neutrality. Yeah. And I think the best analogy I have for it really goes back almost 100 years to the last great golden age when railroads were being laid across the country and Standard Oil was developing what became this huge monopoly of the industrial age. Now, one of the ways that the Rockefellers were able to build Standard Oil into such a juggernaut was they cut deals with the railroads so they would get a lower price when they shipped their oil to market than small little oil producers all over Pennsylvania. And that made their products cheaper everywhere. And that allowed them to buy out those small producers, crush them effectively, because they controlled the railways. In many ways, that is the fear of people who have been advocating for net neutrality. They want the internet railway to have one price for everyone, so big companies can't crush small companies. So the FCC's decision to support net neutrality on the internet was a big decision, but there was also a giant loophole in it. It doesn't include mobile technology. So right now, you're seeing deals, like one between T-Mobile and Netflix, that make it possible for consumers to surf those services without paying data fees, but not a small startup. So you're seeing the same business logic play out in mobile. And actually, I think that's going to be the thing to watch going forward.
Well, and actually, I just got a letter in the mail from my phone provider saying that I'm going to now have to pay an extra $5 a month for my unlimited data plan. So we'll see. It's going to start to cost us more. Steve, as you look ahead to next year, what are the big trends for tech in Silicon Valley?
Well, I think the big challenge for Silicon Valley is going to be to figure out, in the future, how are we going to interact with our computers, right? So for the last few years, we've all developed this habit where we walk around with our heads down, tapping on a little glass screen with our thumbs. That is not the way human beings evolved to communicate with each other or the world. And so I think whatever company can figure out how to make interactions with computers and computing more human, that company will be in a position to really drive sort of the next giant wave of technology progress.
And we're going to have to cover that, I'm sad to say, without your help, Steve, because you are leaving NPR at the end of this year to go out and start a company of your own. Your thoughts, Steve, we're going to miss you, but your thoughts as you get ready to embark on a new venture.
Well, you know, I'm obviously excited. There are lots of stories in the course of my career that I'm proud of. Exposing ethical abuses in Washington or abuses by private military contractors. My time covering technology for NPR and Marketplace here in Silicon Valley, I think the biggest thing I learned, maybe my biggest contribution, was to try and capture the curiosity and the optimism and some of the idealism that really drives this place. I mean, the technology industry has been subject, rightly, to a lot of criticism in the last year, but it is also probably the center of optimism in this country. And obviously it's infectious because I've caught the bug.
Steve Henn, technology correspondent for NPR for just another couple of weeks. Steve, it's been great working with you, not just here, but going back to the Marketplace Washington Bureau many years ago. I hope it happens again someday, but good luck with your new venture. And thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care, Jeremy.